B.
Hi, I'm Shirley. I'm definitely attic. Is that attic or attic? What is it? Attic, yeah. Okay, I first want to say that, you know, 47 years ago, our fathers brought drugs over here, right? Okay, and I was one of the ones that had to do some research, and I wound up in this program through God's grace and mercy. And what happened was I had a postman, and the postman is here. He's here at this convention. And this postman, I'll never forget, and he was in our neighborhood, and he would deliver the mail at 10 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night. You know, you might, if you was on public assistance, you can forget it, because you get your check late the next day, whenever he felt like it. So what the neighborhood did is they wrote a petition up on this mailman and tried to get him removed from our community. So what happened was my mother, I never forget, she wrote another petition not to get rid of him. And she, you know, and so all the old ladies dealt, you know, worked with my old mother, my little old mother, so they didn't get rid of him. One day I seen that same postman that our neighborhood tried to get rid of, and he had on his uniform, was fresh. He was all chipper, and, you know, he was delivering the mail with a tune, and, you know, and I was like, wow, you know, So what happened was he knew I was in my addiction, and one day he saw me, and I was at the store purchasing some paraphernalia at the store, the local store, and I tried to hide it because I know something about him changed. I didn't want him to see me, you know, buying paraphernalia. So I tried to cuff it, you know, when he came in. But he saw it. And it's like he timed me, you know, to prepare the drugs. He knew it. From the paraphernalia, he knew what I was getting ready to do. And he timed me, and he came just as I was getting ready to do my thing and knocked on my door. Mailman! You know, and I was like, you know, I have a mailbox, you know, you don't have to knock on my door, you know, and I knew he was coming, and so he left, and I wouldn't answer the door, of course, and I wouldn't say nothing, I was real quiet, and he slid literally underneath my door, and that was the first day that I experienced this program. I looked at the literature, you know, I was like looking at it, and I picked up a pamphlet, and I started reading, and just so happened, y'all, the first one that I picked up was Who Was an Addict, and it was unbelievable, you know, so he was doing real good, y'all, so he was walking around, you know, recruiting addicts, right? So from that point on, you know, I've been here, you know, I went to treatment, but treatment, it didn't do anything for me. I went to treatment, I got fat. What I went in treatment, 170, left 270, damn near, you know, so, you know, that's all I did. I just ate in treatment. But anyway, I didn't hear anything. I was still toxic. I didn't hear nothing. But I came here, and they said, sit. This is my first learning to listen. They said, winners sit in the front. And I said, wow, you know. So I never sat in the back in any meeting. Never. I always sat up front. Front row, third row, second row, fourth row. I was in the mix. Then I heard, you know, what really got me was the cliches. You know, I heard them talking about, you know, the pack. If you stay in the pack, you won't be ate by the lions. You know, stuff like that. And I remember, you know, this guy told a story about the lion who left the pack. And, no, the calf who left the pack and got ate by the lion. You know, so what I did is I heard stuff like that. And then the main thing I heard was get a sponsor. You know, and I did. I got a sponsor. Where I came, I'm from D.C. And, you know, D.C. is a real close-knit city. You know, everybody know everybody in D.C., so, because it's so small and so close. So, you know, when in D.C., you kind of like get, they tell you who your sponsor. When I came in, they told you who your sponsor was. You know, this is your sponsor right here. So they gave me my sponsor. I still have her today. I love her dearly. You know, I couldn't ask for nobody else to guide me in this program. Then I heard this. They said, sponsorship is like this. You know, they said that if you ski, go to the slopes and jump out there with your skis on. Jump off the first cliff, you know, without a guide. You don't know where you're going to be at. So I got a sponsor because I didn't want to be all over this program either. You know, I got a sponsor. She kind of guided me, you know, and she said, you know, get you a home group. She told me, you know, that's how you get your network. You get your little friends. Now, I had some friends in this program before I got here. I had a lot of friends. And, you know, I got high with them, so I know a lot of people, you know. But they said, you know, when you come here, there'll be a group of people that you're going to meet that's going to wind up your network. And it may not be the people you got high with on the street. It might be some outside other people that get to know you for you. This is when you get the opportunity to really share somebody who you really are. You know, and I enjoyed that. And what I did is I got a network. I got a home group. My first home group, learning to listen. I ain't listen too good. Let me just tell y'all, when I first came in here, my home group was on V Street. I'll never forget. I was a coffee maker. And back then, you had to fight for a position. You know, it was like you come there, you bring your network with you so your network can vote. Because it wasn't that, yeah, you know, you fought for a position. So I brought my little network in. I got the coffee making position, you know, and what happened was the meeting was an hour and a half, of course, and they told me, this is what the group told me. They said, this one guy named Michael, I'll never forget, he said, Shirley, they're going to ask you to come in 30 minutes early for the meeting because the coffee needs to be ready when, you know, people come to the meeting. So I said, okay. He said, they're going to pull you up, so get ready. You know, I was like, okay, all right. So the first time I didn't listen was then. You know, I never forget, I went to the, when the group pulled me up, they said, Shirley, can you just come 30 minutes early? So, yo, I just went off. I don't know what happened. I don't know where it came from. But I told them, I said, look, I said, the H with y'all, if y'all want coffee when you walk in the door, you know, you need to bring it back from McDonald's or 7-Eleven. You know, the bottom line is I'm not coming here 2 hours, being here 2 hours. I got other things to do. I have a life. You know, I just went off. So then I threw the coffee pot at the group with coffee in it, and it was hot. So I had kind of like, you know, just lost it. And I went home, and thank God I listened and got a sponsor because I went home and shared it with my sponsor. And she told me, she said, you know the importance of the coffee? And I was like, ain't nothing but it's some caffeine. It, you know, get somebody ripping and running, you know. I said, it ain't nothing important about the coffee. You know, she said, well, let me just tell you, and I'm listening. You know, she said, the coffee is really for the newcomer. She said, that newcomer will go there to that meeting just to get a cup of coffee to put a dent in their stomach because their stomach is so empty. And that night, y'all, I thought I had killed every newcomer that came in the daggone building. You know, I just felt terrible. From that point on, I took this program somewhat seriously because there's some other points when I didn't listen, you know. So they said getting service. You know, I did the coffee thing. I got there at 30 minutes early. I followed direction, pissed off, but I'm beyond, I was mad. I didn't want to come there early. And I made the coffee, and it went smooth. Next thing they said, getting service on a higher level. I have a sponsor that is a service, I call her a service junkie. She likes doing service. So all of her sponsees, we do service. And so I got on H&I. And I enjoyed H&I. H&I, you have to listen because you're carrying a meeting to people in treatment centers, institutions, and there's a way you have to conduct yourself. Now, we know at an NA meeting, we can curse somebody out, get put out, and then they let us come back in the next day. Well, if that happened at an H&I meeting, you can't come back in the facility. You know, and plus you have just kind of messed it up for our name that he talked about when he read. You know, you representing someone. So I had to listen. You know, I went to that. I carried the H&I meeting to the women at Lorton when they had a Lorton facility for women for 6 years. I enjoyed that. I went there, and I was respectful. I was respectful to the officers because the officers really didn't want us coming in there because if we got everybody clean in that facility, they won't have no job. So they wasn't really nice when you got there, you know. So, you know, I did what I was supposed to do. I brought in speakers, and it was sometimes I would say, I'm sorry, you can't go because that outfit you got on is too hoochie. Or when I take a dude, he would have on some pants cutting all over his stuff. And I said, baby, you can't wear them things. You can wear that to the club, but you can't wear it in Lorton. I'm sorry, you can't go around my girls like that, you know. So, you know, there were some things that I had to listen to when I got there, the rules and regulations of how you conduct yourself, you know. And I try to use those same rules to conduct myself, period. You know, it was just teaching me how to become a person, a real respectful person, not only respectful to you all, but respectful to myself. You know, what happened was I did my little H&I thing, you know, went on, you know, they said that I got also got a what's that position called? Area service. Now, y'all know area service is another level of service. Everybody in there arguing, everybody know everything. You know, when you go in there, you know, you think that, you know, you go in there to do some service work. Get ready for some personality, you know. So I'm in area service, and I left. I got tired of the personality, and I left. And it was a girl, y'all, that's in my home group who saw me at an NA dance, like that night, that Saturday night. And she said, I heard you didn't stay at the meeting. And she's known for having a lot of sponsees, so she had all her sponsees in the bathroom. And before, prior to all this, y'all, I was Big Shirley. I was Big Shirley, I was Jamaican Shirley, I was New York Shirley, I was Fly Betty. I was a crazy woman. You know, I had too many personalities. And, you know, Big Shirley really, really, it was hard for me to let her go. You know, so she gonna chump me in the bathroom. This is the way I felt. She chumped me in the bathroom, gonna tell me, you didn't hold down your position. You were supposed to stay to the meeting end. So I'm looking at her and I'm looking at all her girls. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I'm getting ready to fight all of them. They don't even know it yet. You know, but I'm standing there, y'all, and I got up and I said, you know what, you're right. You're certainly right. I washed my hands, dried my hands off, and I left out that bathroom and I went and told somebody in the dance. They asked me, why was I crying? I was crying because that was the first day that I learned really how to listen, that it was all over for me. Once I got rid of Big Shirley, it was real easy for me to listen. Big Shirley was tough. She was rough, you know, and I didn't chump. I felt like a chump. I really felt like a chump, but hey, it's all right. I'm clean, you know, sometimes, you know, I take a chump then be using. You know, and I left out and I cried and I talked to the person in the dance and they said, you're just growing, that's all, you're growing. You know, so that was, you know, some parts of me learning how to listen. Now, there were some other areas that I didn't want to change, like, you know, I didn't want to change, you know, some of my behaviors, like, you know, shopping, addiction, you know, those kind of things. You know, I didn't really never have a problem with the men factor. You know, I wasn't chasing the men. I was chasing clothes when I got in here. You know, I'm a booster. And that's something I didn't listen. I stole forever. If somebody even gave me clothes in a store and put it in the bag and I ain't pay for it, I stole it. And a lot of that was happening. You know, that was the tough thing that I didn't, you know, I didn't listen. And somebody kept telling me that one day you're going to wind up in an institution clean. You know, but you all, you know, I got to say this. I have over 2 years and that's still, and I have 16 years clean. So I stole all the whole time I was in here. That's something I never listened to. I mean, I followed the direction. I went to the meetings. I got my sponsor. You know, I followed through on all the plans that you all set for me because I was being guided. I was not going to follow my plan. My plan was I self-destruct. You know, and as a result, you know, I have become a productive member of society. I can say that. You know, I have set down. As a result of falling direction, I have sat down, and it was a student Democrat, you know, and ate with the president, you know, enjoyed it. You know, I never forget, I went there, and I looked so good, y'all, because I was fly. I was with the president. Y'all know I was going to be fly. I put the gear on, and all of us dressed up, but it was only certain places, certain people could be in certain areas, according to how fly you was. So, of course, I was just flyest, I thought. So, you know, I had an opportunity to be right there with the president, you know, and the place was $1,500 a plate. And they let us all eat, of course. So, you know, and they was bringing out shrimp. And all the shrimp was about the size of my hand. I mean, big old gigantic shrimp I ain't never seen in my life. You know, I said, oh, shucks, I'm living large up in this thing, you know. So what happened was I kept telling the lady, could you bring some more shrimp out? And we kept saying, could you bring some more shrimp out? So the lady she got so tired of me asking for shrimp. She brought this great big bowl out with a full of shrimp and just set it on the table and put it down on the table real hard. You know, but those are some of the things because I stayed in here and I listened to what people were saying. It took me outside of this program and helped me live a normal life, you know. And then on top of that, you all, you know, as a student Democrat, that means I went back to school, you know. And I went in and I listened to teachers. Now, how many of you all remember, I know for me, I ain't never listened to no teacher when I was in school, ever. I mean, I just didn't like school. I went there. I always say I went there to get my co-conspirator. That's all I went there for, you know, to pick up my co-conspirator for the day, you know. And what happened was I went back to school. I got another degree because I did get a dope fiend degree. I did graduate when I was a dope fiend. You know, I got an associate's degree in mortuary science. That's how, you know, I was very morbid. I want to deal with nothing but the dead, you know. So I got a degree in mortuary science, you know. So then I came back and I liked people. Y'all made me like people, and I like helping people. So what I did is I got my degree in social work, and I felt real good about that. And I always wanted to go to Howard University. You know, I always wanted to go to an HBCU anyway. You know, I just wanted to be a part of always, but the drugs kept me using. I didn't have time to go to school. I mean, you know, I wake up in the morning, it's put on my clothes and go and get high and get high all day and all night. So how was that? What time did I have to go to school? So, you know, I got an opportunity to go get my master's degree at Howard University, and I felt so good walking across the stage. And you know what? Only one thing, though, wasn't enough for me. It wasn't good enough because there was people wearing these little Tams, and we didn't wear Tams. We wore a cap. And I was like, well, why are people wearing Tams? They said, that's the doctoral people who got doctorate degrees. I said, okay, I got to come back to school. I got to give me one of them Tams, you know. So that's my goal, is to go back and do that. You know, but listening to you people in these rooms have just took me with places I never thought I would go. I joined a sorority. I joined a sorority in here, you know, in school with the hazing and all that in school. I would have never done that on drugs. I could have never went through and followed somebody marching or something or doing something stupid in school. But when I got here, I joined a sorority. I feel real good about that. I'm as active in the sorority as I am here. You know, I want to go to the world, but the next week is our big convention, so I have to go to our convention. I went, came to Ocean City. You know, I split it half and half because you all allowed me, by me listening to you all, because I wouldn't have got none of this if I ain't listened. Trust me. I still be, speaking of the postman, he in here. You know, I still be, you know, looking at him, chipper in the neighborhood, passing the mail. You know, I don't know. For me, I'm not hard-headed. I never was hard-headed. I followed my mother's directions when I was a kid. I became real stubborn when I was on drugs. That's because there was one thing that I was focused on, and that was getting the narcotic. I couldn't focus on anything else, so I didn't listen to anything else. You know, it's real easy for me to follow direction there. You know, this year I did something different. I'm in a house with a bunch of girls. We having fun. We living large. You know, I always say that I can't live large 365 days a year, but I sure can do it for a weekend. You know, we live in this big old mansion, and we having a ball in a mansion. I mean, the water right there. You know, I never forget last year I was asleep. When I woke up, I screamed. Because I looked, and all I saw was water. And I woke my buddy up. I said, look. I said, the house done moved in the water. He said, look, sit up. I sat up, and the house still there. You know, I just was laying down, so all I saw was water. I thought the house had rolled out there in the water. You know, but, you know, that's what this program has afforded me. It's afforded me a beautiful life. I mean, just wonderful. I can't ask for anything. I can't ask for anything. And even though sometimes my attitude gets in the way, it gets in the way because it gets in the way. I'm not going to say because I'm human. It just gets in the way because that's what I like to do. You know, I like it to get in the way. Sometimes I like to be stubborn, you know. But, you know, I know that on the other side of that, it's going to be all right. And I learned that when I was in the bathroom with that girl when she chumped me, because I still say she chumped me, and I tell her that too. When she chumped me and told me, oh, you're supposed to stay at the meeting. You ain't supposed to leave. And then she shook her head, you know, and pointed her finger, you know. And I remember that just every day. I remember that when someone is telling me something, you know, when somebody's telling me something, I remember that day that everything still went smooth by me listening. I ain't fight her. So I'm okay. I ain't dead. You know, and that's because I listened. You know, I don't know. For me, learning to listen was real easy. I just followed direction. I ain't had time. But yes, I am stubborn when I want to be. I am. But, you know, when it comes to threatening my life, I'm not going to be stubborn. I'm open. I'm very open. And I'm a social worker now, so I give it a lot. I give it a lot, so who am I to judge? You know, who am I to not listen when all I do is listen every day? So why can't I listen to somebody telling me something that's going to work for me when I'm so busy giving out advice to youth, to juveniles every day? I don't like to call them juveniles, but that's what the system calls them, juveniles. You know, I work for the judicial system, and I work with little kids that on their way to these rooms, if they make it, you know, and I give them advice every day. I tell them, you know, I talk to them, and I want them to just hear me, Just hear one thing. You know what they tell me? You don't know nothing about us. You ain't even grow up in the neighborhood. You ain't never been an addict. You ain't never smoked no weed. They look at me and say, "You ain't, I don't know what kind of woman you are, but you ain't like us. You're not like my mother." I look at them. Sometimes I want to break my hand in and say, "Look, let me tell you something," and just chump them up, and say, "Let me tell you, you want to meet Big Shirley?" But the program has told me that I don't have to live like that, that all I can do is keep giving them the information, because people, you all keep giving me the information to grow and develop into a beautiful young lady. That's all I ever wanted to be, is a beautiful young lady. And I'm going to cut it off right now. We got another speaker coming up. I know I didn't speak for 30 minutes, but you all can also share at this meeting too. So I'm going to open this thing up and give it to the next speaker, and I guess he'll introduce him. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Sharon. And now we'd like to introduce our next speaker, Art R.
My name's Art, I'm an addict.
Hey, Art.
Real grateful to be here. And I just want to take a minute and get quiet, if you guys can join me in a moment of silence. Thanks a lot. Thanks for sharing, Shirley. Really, really, really appreciate your message. And you were sharing about Big Shirley, and I was thinking about my childhood. So I ain't always been Art. My mother and father named me after my father, Arthur. But everybody called me Red, or Dirty Red, and I was a badass little kid. I still hear the stories when my parents' friends come around and they used to tell me how bad I was. And I distinctly remember some times when I was told stuff and I refused to listen. It took me to get here, and then even after a period of time, I still wouldn't listen. I remember playing with guys, and we would have to cross an interstate to get to the next neighborhood, and my parents would tell me, "Do not cross that interstate," and I would continue to do it. And they talk about the nuclear blast that we needed to change. What changed me was watching a friend of mine get hit by a car on an interstate. It's like change can be easy or change can be hard for me. I remember, we live, and I'm from Norfolk, Virginia, and Virginia Beach and all that area, and we used to go crabbing when we were kids with a piece of chicken on a string, and some of those waters are real dangerous, and we were advised by our parents not to go out there by ourselves, but we will still do it, and one of the most horrific things that I've ever seen in my life was a friend of mine pulled out of the river covered in crabs, because he went out there by that river without any supervision. And I learned by that nuclear blast to listen to what my parents were saying, I'm real grateful for this process. I got here in July of 92, and actually I come here before, and I went to one of them treatment centers and put on some weight, like Shirley talked about, and got 30, 45 days clean and knew everything. You know what I mean? I mean, I came up in meetings and I was raising my hand. I ain't hear in our area, what they talk about is that if you got less than 30 days clean, you don't really need to be sharing. All you delivering is some mess. We'll set aside a little bit of time after the meeting for you if you feel like using, for you to share, or you go grab somebody after the meeting and share for a minute and then listen. You know, I came from an area where they used to tell you to take the damn cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth, you know, and that's the way I got it. You know, it's like I'm dealing with some newcomers now that, you know, they want it soft. You know, I'm sharing with a cat the other day, and it's like we're going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. You know, you got a year, I got 13 years. We both got the day, you know what I mean? But I got a bunch of experiences that you ain't got. You know what I mean? And it's not about preaching and judging. It's about sharing experience, strength, and hope. And it's like, I got tired. And it's like, look, you know, if I had some dope and it was sitting on a table and I told you that you had to listen to me for you to get some, what would you do? I would have an attentive audience. And it's like, oh, but I ain't trying to live like that today. Well, here's the other side. I got some hope. You know what I mean? And if you want what we have to offer, and the willingness is shut your damn mouth, and are willing to make the effort to get it, then this is what you got to do. You know what I mean? I came around here, and it's like I was hurting. You know what I mean? And the second time I came back, I was too scared to share. You know, I went back out there, and I'm telling you, you know, July of 1992 was one of the hottest summers on record. And I had everything that I owned on my back. You know, and I come from a loving, caring family. But I was in the streets. You know, and I came up on one of the housing projects in Norfolk, Virginia, out the bushes, using. You know, and I ain't forgot the phone booth that I went to call that detox center that I went to before. I can take you to it today. I ain't forgot. You know, and it's that gratitude of seeing myself, you know, progress from point A to point B, because I ain't got there yet. You know, is that you know, I still have to call my sponsor. You know what I mean? And I need to share what's going on with me. And I can't just hang the phone up after I finish sharing. I need to listen to what he got to say. You know what I mean? It's still times when I go into meetings when, you know, I ain't got nothing to say. So, you know, I just don't show up. I go and I sit down and I listen, you know. I tell you what freed me is, you know, the first 6 months, it was hit and miss hearing the message in the rooms. And then, you know, I heard something that somebody said. They said that we need to get a sponsor. And I had been listening to the readings and, you know, and I heard the first step and I heard the second step and I heard the third step. And eventually, you know, I picked up the IP on sponsorship and read the IP, and I found somebody that could guide me through these steps. You know, and he's still my sponsor today after all these years, and actually a good friend. And we worked the first step, you know, and what I learned through working the first step is that I got freed of the power and the control that kept me from listening. I got freed from that. I got freed from the I know syndrome. Because once I wrote that first step, and once I took a good hard look at the unmanageability as a direct result of me exerting power over every situation in my life, it was clear. Art, you need to sit down and you need to shut the hell up. You know what I mean? You need to sit down and you need to shut the hell up. You know, and that's what I did. You know, I sat down after having worked that first step and I listened. You know what I mean? I listened over coffee. I got on the phone and I called guys with more experience than me and I listened. You know, and that's when the second step started to take hold. You know what I mean? I came to believe that art was not the power, and that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity. You know, and I kept reaching out. You know, prior to coming here, I had had a God. You know, and it's like it was a messed up God. You know what I mean? I grew up in a church that, you know, it was about fear, you know, and it was about, it was just about fear, you know, and it wasn't about love. And when y'all share with me that a power greater than me need only be loving and caring and greater than me, that freed me, you know. That freed me to find that power greater than me that I could sit down, quiet with, and listen, you know. You know, learning to listen is that, I need to share about how learning to listen has saved my life. You know, through this process, a whole bunch of stuff happens, you know. We bury family, you know what I mean? We get married, we get divorced, we lose jobs. And it's like, you know, I remember coming into meetings and I remember listening to people cry and share, you know, and not only share the problem about whatever was going on with them, but they also share the solution. And the real solution most days is, you know, just not using, no matter what, you know. And I heard these people go through this stuff day in and day out, and they ain't pick up, you know. And it's like a lot of the stuff I ain't understand, you know. I had never, prior to coming here, lost anybody significant in my life, ever, you know. I remember going to funerals of that real old lady that I ain't know that much, you know what I mean. But, you know, in 97, I had the misfortune of losing my grandfather, you know, in February, and a tremendous misfortune of losing my father in April of the same year. And, you know, and I thought I was going to lose my mind, you know. And I think that had it not been for these rooms and some outside help that I got, I probably would have, you know, because both of these men were incredible. You know, I can't ever remember, you know, asking my mother where my father is and she not being able to say, I don't know. You know what I mean? It won't leave it to Beaver or, you know, none of that stuff. But, you know, these guys did the best they could with the resources that they had. And, you know, and it's like, I'm real proud to be able to say that they were my ancestors. I'm real proud of that, you know. And I came in here after my father and my grandfather died, and I raised my hand and I shared some of the same stuff that I heard those people, some of the same pain that those people were sharing who came before me, and I remembered that those people did not use. And that was the message. As a direct result of having set my ass down and listened, that saved my life. You know, it saved my life. And it didn't take the nuclear blast of watching a friend get pulled out of the lake or the river, or watching a friend get hit by a car to get it. You know, this is a wonderful process. I mean, and, you know, I'm just really, really, really grateful to be here. You know, learning to listen, they talk about service, and is that one of the things that I learned through being involved in service in NA is listening, you know, and putting aside my shit for the good of the group. Being able to listen to different points of view and different opinions and coming to a conclusion that would keep this way of life going. You know what I mean? And that's what the service structure is about. It's about continuing to keep this way of life alive. I have to practice some of the same stuff that I practice in the service structure at home. You know, I'm involved with a person, with a woman who is a lot younger than me and who don't necessarily know as much as me, but she knows some stuff. And I have to respect her opinion. And it's hard for me to do that sometimes. It's hard for me to say, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You need to be quiet. This is the way you got to do it. You know, and I have to back up. You know, I have to back up because I realize that I have a partner. You know what I mean? I have a partner in life. And it's just like in a service. If I want to keep our life going the way that it's going, then I got to listen, you know, and I got to keep it going, you know. Is that work? You know, I am involved, you know, and have been involved over the last several years in some pretty large construction projects, you know, as upper level management. And it's like people look to me for solutions, you know, and oftentimes we have to collaborate on a solution. And it's like, it's so hard for me to bite my tongue. You know what I mean? You know, it's so hard for me to bite my tongue. But I realize that, you know, and I'm going to go back to the NA service thing again, is that I don't know everything. You know what I mean? And the diversity that comes to the table at work, it's not unlike the diversity that comes to the table in Narcotics Anonymous. Differing opinions, different experiences. And it helps me to bite my tongue, listen to that other opinion or that other bit of experience so we can get to the next level. You know, I'm real grateful for that. I'm real, real grateful for that. I'm real grateful to be here. I haven't been to this convention in quite some time. And one of the members of the program committee had come down and to our convention and asked me if I wanted to come up here and share. And I said, you know, I'd be grateful to. I really, really would. You know, it's an honor and a privilege to share, you know, to serve Narcotics Anonymous. It really is. It's a lot of people think that this is about ego. And it's really not about ego. It's about giving away that which was so freely given to me. It ain't even mine. You know, it ain't even mine. You know, nothing that I shared outside of an experience or two belongs to me. It belongs to y'all. You know, and I'm just giving it back. I appreciate you giving it to me. I really, really do. I'm real grateful to be here. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thanks for sharing. Once again, my name is Mark, and I'm an addict. And before we open up the meeting to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the podium one at a time. Also, keep in mind that there may be others who want to share. And with that, the meeting is going to be open.
The mailman. The mailman, yeah. Broke my list. I'm Alvin. I'm an addict. It's only by God's grace that I stand here clean. And I'd like to thank Shirley and Art for sharing their experience, strength, and hope on learning to listen. And one of the things I got mostly from what they shared was life beyond Narcotics Anonymous. you know, Art was talking about, you know, moving beyond just not using to becoming a productive member of society. You know, and our symbol talks about, you know, the goodwill and the service and helping others. And our 12th step, it talks about, you know, helping others outside of Narcotics Anonymous and being in the community, you know. And the 8th and 9th step, you know, it talks about, you know, sometimes you can't make the direct amends, but, you know, by the way I conduct myself in the community is an amends enough, you know, sometime. And in our 4th tradition, it talks about how groups interact with community. So, you know, it is about living outside of Narcotics Anonymous, and I found that since I've been here. One of the things that when I hear words like learning to listen, when I was thinking about this workshop, man, is what a guy shared at a workshop a long time ago. He said that, you know, what I do speaks so loudly you can't hear what I say. You know, and it's about, you know, what I do. You know, and when I got here, guys were doing things, not saying things. You know, we have on our medallion, our gratitude speaks when I care and when I share with others the NA way. So, you know, I listen, you know, through observation. You know, so it's not always sitting in, for me, it's not always sitting and listening to what a person is sharing right here in this hour or half hour or whatever time a person gets to share in a meeting, man. It's, you know, it's the walking, you know, walking the walk, you know, and as opposed to just talking the talk. You know, because I know there have been times in my recovery when I was, you know, talking clean and living dirty. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, what I had to do is I kept coming back long enough to recognize, man, it's about the walk, Alvin, not about the talk. It's not about, you know, you coming and sharing in a meeting, you know, thanks for sharing, and then going out and tricking. You know what I'm saying? After the meeting is over, you know, after the dance. You know, so those are the kind of things that, you know, I learned to do by keep coming back, man, you know, by watching. You know, our 11th step talks about, you know, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, you know. And in that process, it talks about, you know, my prayer in the 11th step is talking to God. And my meditation is listening to God. You know, I have a friend that says that prayer is more important, that meditation is more important than prayer, because God is talking to me in the meditation. You know, I always thought, well, I can, you know, even if I didn't have time to meditate, you know, I would pray. And I come to understand that, you know, that whole listening process, man, is so vitally important. You know, it took a little while for me to kind of get and understand that, man, because, you know, where I come from and being on the street, man, it's just like, you know, whoever talked the loudest, whoever talked the slickest, you know, it was always the one that you'd be attracted to, you know, talking out the side of their neck, man. But when I look back on my life, you know, the guys that were hanging on the corners, that were giving me that bad information, man, those are the one, weren't the ones that helped me stop using. They would give me information, yeah, man, this is how you stop using. If you're on boat, you use this. If you're on coke, you use that. And what they were just telling me is rearrange your seat on the Titanic. But ultimately, I knew my ass was going down. You know, so listening, man, the whole process of listening, man, is an art form. You know, sometimes it takes some time. It's easier to listen if you're new. It's easier to listen if you're on the front row as opposed to death row, which is the back row. You know, so I just want to share that, man, and tell the folks that, you know, Shirley and Art, I've known y'all, you know, all of your recovery. Oh, I'm your predecessor. All of your recovery, and I love you very much, and thank you for letting me share.
I'm an addict. My name is Dave.
Hey, Dave.
And I heard a lot of good things from, you know, everybody. But what I was thinking about for me was for me to learn to listen, I had to learn a bunch of stuff first, because when I came in here, I knew everything. And when I came in, I had to learn that I didn't know everything, and that I needed to, and when I finally learned that I didn't know anything or know everything, I was then able to listen to you, because then I could find, you know, I had an epiphany after I came in here, and that was I learned that, you know, because I always thought there was only two ways of doing things, my way and the wrong way. And what, you know, my epiphany was that I learned there was my way, there was the wrong way, and that your way. And then I also learned that your way could actually be better than my way. And I was just like, man, I couldn't believe it. But when I came to realize that, you know, your way could be better than mine, then I was able to listen to you. Because until then, I was still thinking that, you know, you had nothing of any value to say to me, and that I knew everything, then what I heard would go in one ear and out the other. And it took me to get to the point where I could realize that, you know, you, as being anybody, could tell me something that I didn't already know and that it could help me. That enabled me to listen to what you had to say, because I had spent so many years hearing what you said, and it just, you know, I could repeat it to you, but it just went out the other side. I never listened to it because I never was honest, open-minded, and willing to listen to what, you know, other people had to say. So thanks for letting me share.
How you doing? My name is AJ, and I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic. Okay, like to let y'all know what's going on in my life today by me doing what was suggested for me to do in these rooms. I'm living a new life. Y'all don't see me no more in D.C. and Maryland. I moved to Philadelphia now. And I came to D.C. Last month to visit my mother, and I went to a meeting. I heard about the convention. I said, let me go to this convention. It's been 4 or 5 years since I've been to a convention from D.C., you know. But I remember where I come from. And by me doing what was suggested for me to do in these rooms, I'm celebrating 16 years next month. And it feels good. I could get up here and look y'all in the eye and be honest today. Because I was, by me doing the program my way, I would learn what y'all said, because everybody sound real cool but me, you know. And I wanted to sound like y'all. So I would learn y'all's story. And I take it across town to another meeting, you know. If I was doing it my way, I would hear y'all's story, and I would take it up to Philadelphia. And I'd share y'all's story, you know, because y'all's story sound good. My story, it sounded crazy. I didn't think y'all wanted to hear my story. So I learned them good war stories, and I would take them and share them, you know. My sponsor told me I was being a parakeet. If I wanted this program, I had to tell y'all what was going on in my life, you know. It was very, very hard for me to do that. I had to keep coming back to learn how to do that. And what I learned, I had to drop the image I had and just be honest, you know. I didn't have to sound as good as the next person. I don't have to look as good as the next person. That's all I had to do is do the best I could for myself. And I kept coming back learned I had to drop the little image I had, you know. So I dropped that image and kept coming back to meetings, and I started learning to listen and listen to learn. And I learned I had to share my story, you know. So I started telling everybody what was going on in my life, and after the meeting, people would come up to me and say, wow, I got a lot out of your story. Thanks for sharing, you know. I really got a lot out of your story. But I said, wow, when I share y'all stories, the only thing y'all tell me, keep coming back, you know. Guess y'all knew I was lying, you know. But when I study and come through my story, y'all, it seemed like y'all got help out of that, you know. And I feel good. I said, wow. I learned people that might be laughing at me is because they got a problem. They don't know how to open up and be honest themselves, you know. And by me doing it y'all way, like I said, I'm living a new life. I got married, been married for 7 years, and been clean for 16 years, and it feels good, you know. I could be AJ today, and I'm going to keep coming back and keep trying to help other suffering addicts with no strings attached. Thanks for letting me share.
My name is Peter, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Peter.
You know, listening, that is a good message, because, you know, I never wanted to listen in my life. All my life, from the 70s all the way up to 91, I never listened. when I came in Narcotics Anonymous at 91, I'd listen, totally listen. My mother was always telling me how to grow up and stop getting in trouble. I wouldn't listen to her because I thought I was all right. I was doing my drugs, doing my sex with women and men. I didn't give a shit about nobody. And now I don't do that anymore. You know, I just, this month, I had an operation and I had a polyp removed, and I'm going slow, and it takes a little bit of time. And, you know, I listened to my doctor. I said, hey, I need to go and get this looked upstairs. And he did the scope. I checked it out. And he said, if you didn't move your polyp, you would have had cancer in your whole body. And, you know, that higher power came and said, hey, Peter, if you don't remove this, you'll get cancer. I was lucky, very lucky, because my aunt had cancer, and that hurt her. And she knows I had this operation, and she's proud of me, because I'm clean, I'm not using. Because if I was using, I wouldn't be taking care of my health or my life. I'd be running and running and running. Life is a miracle today. I have so many, I'm learning disabled. I have mild cerebral palsy. I have a seizure disorder and chronic pain in my legs and arms. And how I be a sponsor to people, when they give me a ride home, I talk to them. That's how I be a sponsor. And that's how it works. You help other people, and they help you. And that's all I have to share today. Thank you.